a guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It's just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Our esteemed host, Sparrow, is currently having a coughing fit. So myself and Buster are joined by what can only be described as a permanent MFC podcast member, Joe McKelvey, these days. So the three of us are just basically going to wing it. How are we doing, lads?
Hi, not bad, mate.
Absolutely fantastic, thank you.
Right, hopefully the sound's working on this as well, because I'm just basically haphazardly trying to make this happen. So we'll just start with the obvious. A one-each draw at Fir Hill. The chat about it will be slightly awkward, considering I was the only one of the three of us that were there. Of course, Sparrow was there as well. But unfortunately, he's not here to give us his input. The game itself was quite frustrating. I'm sure you guys will have watched the highlights or read about it anyway, so you'll no doubt already know that we could have been a good 3 or 4 nil down by the time we actually got back into the game. So we'll just cover yourself, Buster, first and foremost. Is it the kind of game then that we were maybe a wee bit naive going into? I think the podcast last week we were quite optimistic. We'd obviously scored 4 goals against Accies. Louis Moult was obviously on fire. We were getting into it thinking Thistle were, albeit quite early on in the season, bottom of the league. It was a game I think we thought we could take all 3 points in, and yet ultimately we were very, very lucky to get away with a draw.
I think you've got it just about right there. As you say, you know, we were very confident going into it. I think last week I did mention as well that it's been a hard place for us to go. I think it was yourself that says, you know, what's history is history. Basically, we're doing well, let's go for it. And I think we all sort of bought into that. But as you say, you know, I wasn't there. I was working, unfortunately, getting my eye on the BBC and things like that. And as you say, sounded as if we were kind of lucky, not to be 2 or 3 goals down rather than just 1. But having watched the highlights, having seen that we had the goal chopped off at one point as well, who knows if that had accounted, who knows where we would have ended up, you know. From what I heard from a few people who were at the football as well, you know, when we got our allowed equaliser, Thistle sort of went in the back foot a wee bit, and you know, there was only a couple of minutes left then, so who knows what would have happened if we'd got that one 20 minutes before or whatever it was. I think, you know, looking back at it, and I think as McGee says as well, we coming away with a point was not a too bad result, especially when you consider how bad I heard we were in the first half.
Well, Joe, I mean, Buster obviously mentions Scott McDonald's goal that was ruled out at the game. You know, I don't think there was anybody in the entire stadium that thought it was offside. In fact, in the immediate aftermath, I think we were trying to work out whether there'd perhaps been a foul on the build-up because it was so obviously onside. Buster's right, you know, after we did actually score, Thistle went on the back foot, we started to look a wee bit better going forward. So I suppose it could be argued that had McDonald's goal been allowed to stand like it should have, we could have perhaps went and got the 3 points. Given you know, the kind of the same sort of thing that happened up at Pittodrie, and the way Warburton reacted to what wasn't a foul for Aberdeen that cost Rangers, you know, 3 points. Is it something we should dwell too much on, or should we just accept that, you know, we weren't good enough to get the win regardless?
Well, if what you're saying is true about us being lucky to go and just one down at half time, then I'd say you probably have to start at home and say that our performance wasn't good enough over the 90 minutes to get the win anyway. But it's frustrating nonetheless. Last week was the same. We had a good goal disallowed. And last week is one you don't come away moaning about, because you've won 4-2, Louis Moultz scored 4. There's better things to be talking about. But I mean, when you look at it, Mark Warburton's thrown his flaky and Sunday, and it's got people talking about, is it a foul, is it not? Whereas that's 2 weeks in a row we've been let down by officials, and it kind of falls into the background a wee bit. As you say, we kind of got a bit of impetus when we scored. Had we scored the first goal, had it been allowed, then maybe we would have got that impetus quicker and we could have maybe had more of a chance of getting a winner. But it wasn't to be, unfortunately. And I was like you myself when I seen the highlights. I thought it must have been a foul at first, and I was astonished to find out it was offside, because, I mean, you obviously know that you can't be offside from behind the ball, and the ball seemed to be nodded across, and McDonald almost looked as if he stepped onto the ball from behind. So I really couldn't grasp how the officials managed to spot that one as offside. It's not one that you look back at and think, oh, with the benefit of hindsight, he's not offside. But calling that in real time would have been tough. Calling that in real time should have been a basic competency of a referee and a linesman's job.
Well, I mean, I should point out the reason that I mentioned Warburton wasn't just to get a wee dig in and then to rejoice in Aberdeen getting a last-minute winner against them. It's also because on the Super Scoreboard yesterday, I don't listen to it regularly because it's usually filled with absolute cretins phoning up. But Hugh Keevans made the point that Warburton was obviously putting a lot of effort into his whinging and his moaning. And Hugh Keevans made the point that that decision wasn't even the worst decision of the weekend. The worst decision of the weekend was clearly the Scott McDonald offside. So that, you know, added to the free kick that Aberdeen got, added to the fact that Craig Thompson, and as I said earlier, I know you two guys weren't at the game, so you can't comment on the actual performance of the referee on Saturday, but Craig Thompson, who appears to be widely recognised as one of our best referees, was absolutely terrible. You know, not in a biased way, he wasn't, you know, anti-Motherwell or anything like that. He was just terrible for both teams. He was just, you know, stifling any good play that was happening. He wouldn't let the ball run. Just had an absolute nightmare of a game. He's obviously been let down with his assistant referee as well in terms of that goal. I mean, Buster, where is it just, you know, do we need to just accept that as Scottish football fans, we're going to get pretty inept refereeing? That's not to say that the referee at the Aberdeen Rangers game had a poor game overall. I thought he actually had quite a good game. But do we need to just accept that nowadays with TV cameras and things like that, we're going to be, you know, far more emphasis is going to be placed in these decisions? Or do we have an issue with a poor, poor standard of refereeing in Scotland?
I don't think it's so much an issue with the standard. As you say, I think it's more to do with the fact that the evidence is much more easily spottable these days when you can look it back on television, no bother. I think, you know, your comments about Thompson are the comments we hear every time Thompson referees a Motherwell game. You know, I think there's maybe an issue there. But I don't think there's an issue in general, because quite a lot of the time you can come away for a football, not really talk about the ref. You know, you might say, nah, I made a wee error here, a wee error there. But, you know, usually I think that the referees are not too bad, and they go unnoticed quite a lot of the time. And I think that's when you know they've had quite a decent game. But, you know, I think the error on the linesman's behalf, especially when it was, as you say, when it wasn't as if it was, you know, somebody bolting through, you know, onside by a nose or anything. It was pretty blatant. that he was onside. And again, from what I heard at the time, you know, texting Hughes and saying that you'd any idea how he was even offside at the time and not, you know, at the game. You know, I think there's got to be things like that looked at, and the referees, the linesmen, whoever it is that makes these decisions, they have to be sort of, I don't want to say punished because that's not the right word, but, you know, there has to be a sort of system where you make a mistake, you know, you maybe drop a level for a couple of weeks until you prove yourself again. And that way, you know, if it keeps happening, these sort of mistakes keep happening, then we all know there is a problem with the refereeing. But I think the refereeing standard is, you know, is pretty standard across the board in general anyway.
Well, just to kind of maybe try and make things a wee bit more positive for the game on Saturday, because I think, again, you know, being there, I think it was a wee bit flat. It felt a wee bit negative, although we were good to, you know, happy to get away with a point in the end. I think that compared to what we were expecting, the performance was maybe a bit, little bit low-key. And saying that, Joe, is it worth turning on its head then and saying that perhaps a Motherwell side in the past could have lost 3 or 4, you know, nil at Firhill? I think Sparra said last week about on the podcast about the two previous meetings or the two recent meetings at Firhill, that the one we took a big crowd under Barraclough and get beat, the game that Ainsworth was arguably, you know, put out, sort of hung out to dry by Mark McGee, that we get beat. Should we perhaps be a wee bit more optimistic then that in the past Saturday as a game we would have got beaten and yet we did actually manage to grind out a point?
Yeah, I suppose that's one way you could look at it. I mean, I was looking at it last week just after Sparra said that in the podcast, and I was sure I noticed that I think we were sitting on something like one victory in 20 years at Firhill. I think that was a game we won 5-1 just after Christmas. Mm. So obviously it's something of a bogey ground for us. And I mean, you could say that having lost there so many times and kind of, there was a lot of people on the forums and things in the lead up to the game saying, oh, we never won at Firhill, I'm not going in here with any expectancy despite the fact that we've won, which shouldn't be the case. I mean, you should be good if you've won against Hamilton Accies in the style that we did, we should then be looking to push on to beat Partick Thistle in the next game. But yeah, it's certainly in a game that we could have lost that we've come away with a point, you have to take some positives from that. And I mean, that's, albeit only one victory in the four games, that's as unbeaten in four. And as tight as the table is just now, we actually look, despite having only won two league games, is it, that we're actually in a relatively healthy position at the minute, you may say.
Well, just when you're talking about positives to take from the game, and you also mentioned that 5-1 game in which McFadden scored the wee lob, he was certainly a positive for me. Again, I know I'm kind of, you know, talking at you rather than to you because you weren't at the game, but McFadden, it's one of those ones where it perhaps was a convenient time to bring him on. We've already said that once McDonald scored a goal that was allowed, Thistle kind of went on the back foot. But for me, a lot of that was to do with McFadden coming on, because up until that point, we hadn't really had someone who would just, you know, calm things down, take possession of the ball, play a simple pass. Everything up until that point had either bypassed the midfield or had been quite rushed or had looked a bit just like long ball, you know, long ball football. We didn't really bring Molt into the game, that kind of thing. And yet there was McFadden getting the ball, trying to make things happen, just being a bit more composed. And I think, for me, I know he was involved in the goal. Obviously, it was just, you know, playing the ball out to Tate, who obviously set up his, you know, got his second assist in 2 weeks. But for me, I was very encouraged by McFadden coming on, because I know that Sparra in particular, a couple of weeks ago after Dingwall, had said that Faddy coming on was a bit of a heartbreaker or something like that. You know, the idea that this Mother legend came on and just looked so far off the pace. But for me, McFadden was a big, big positive. I mean, based on the, you know, going to Firhill, drawing one each, not really creating much, how far off, or do you think we will be, Buster? Do you think we are? Can we consider James McFadden for a possible start in the coming weeks, if, you know, if Saturday's anything to go by?
But like you said, I didn't witness it myself, unfortunately. But if he's putting the work in training, if he's fit, basically, I don't see why not. You know, he might have lost his pace, or what pace he had anyway. But you know, the wee touches of class and things like that, you know, you don't lose that sort of stuff. So, like you said, you know, if on Saturday there we're going for it, and the way we sort of go forward, usually under McGee, sort of, you know, full pelt, you know, just go for it, you know, put it in the channel, let the players chase it, move fast. Maybe what was needing was somebody like McFadden to come in, put his foot in the ball, and, you know, look at it, pick a wee simple pass here or there. Sorry, you know. So if we, as McGee says, you know, we can't really play that sort of 4-3-3 that he likes to play. It might not be possible to play that home and away every week. So if he ever needs to change it up, you know, maybe having McFadden sitting in a sort of free role where he can put his foot in the ball, you know, pick a bit of space out for somebody else, maybe, you know, as you say, just knocking it to somebody like Tate, who can then put the ball into the box. I don't see why not, but it all depends, obviously, on how fit he is. You know, if he can still get, say, 60, 70, 80, 90 minutes under his belt these days. But we all know he's got the talent. It's just a question of whether or not he's actually fit, I think.
I mean, it's an interesting prospect in terms of tactics, because the game on Saturday, it looked, for the most part, as though we were playing McGee's favoured 4-3-3, but completely void of any of the attacking football that usually goes with it, to such an extent that it kind of ruled the 4-3-3 completely redundant. We looked a lot more defensive. We held back a lot. Now, obviously, that may not have been the game plan. It might just have been the players, for whatever reason, froze or gave Partick Thistle far too much respect. But for long spells, it did kind of make the impact of a 4-3-3 completely pointless, because we were so defensive that we actually just... It was counterproductive because we were so narrow. And late on in the game, he tried to remedy it by putting McDonald up front with Bowman, and moving Molt onto the left wing and Cadden onto the right. And, you know, Molt up until that point, he was obviously struggling a wee bit with a knock, hadn't trained during the week, wasn't in the game at all, was completely left out on that side. And it was only when McFadden came on that things really started to work. So perhaps, you know, tactics might have came into it there. I know you were talking about McFadden, about being fit. I mean, Joe, we could suppose that takes us on nicely to the under-20s. Third win on the bounce tonight, a 1-0 win over Kilmarnock. I wasn't keeping track of the score, but you let me know it was 1-0. Don't know how much more you know about the game, but I do know McFadden started. So, you know, he's came on Saturday, he's changed the game, he's started tonight. So presumably, fitness... You know, presumably McGee believes that once McFadden's fit, he can be playing a big part in the first team.
Yeah, you would think that was the case. I mean, if all his contribution was going to be the first team was 10 or 15 minutes there, here and there, he wouldn't have started two under-20s games now. I believe he's played the majority of both of them. And if you look at that compared to guys like Lee Lucas, who didn't feature from the bench on Saturday, didn't feature for the 20s tonight. Even if you look at Dom Thomas, didn't feature for the 20s tonight either. I mean, if you look at players like that who should be positioning themselves to be available to play a full game if need be, they are not in the 20s team right now. Certainly is, must be in the plans to start a full game. Possibly, you need to get your squad into the position to be able to do that, but for me, I think we're probably at the stage in his career where he'll be at his most effective when it's like the likes of a game on Saturday, where he can come on, can put his foot in the ball, and kind of speak to the guys around him, lift them, play good passes. So I don't think anymore that I could see him lasting 90 minutes, but you never know. You never know.
Well, another player who played on Saturday, who will perhaps be quite pleased today, is Chris Cadden. I don't think there was any doubts he was going to be named in Scott Gemmell's Scotland under-21 squad. Obviously, Ricky Sprazier is a different prospect when he was in charge. We've obviously mentioned him once or twice in the podcast. I'm not a fan. I don't think, you know, any of us particularly are. He perhaps symbolises that kind of dinosaur that we need to get away from. So it was good to see Scott Gemmell's squad today. It's worth pointing out that 12 of his under-21 squad have never been capped for the under-21s. Ryan Gold's not there, John Souter's not there. There's a few others that are kind of mainstays of that squad that aren't there, perhaps because they're going to be ineligible in the coming year or two. Obviously, that didn't stop Sprazier picking a 22-year-old Joe Chalmers. But, I mean, Buster, how important is the under-21s to a player like Chris Cadden? It's been, you know, I remember watching games when you had the likes of Jamie Murphy playing, and obviously it's debatable just how big an impact those had on his development overall. But I mean, above all else, it's obviously encouraging to see any Scotland squad with, you know, brackets Motherwell next to their name.
Yeah, it certainly is. And to be fair, I think it's very well deserved that he's getting into these squads now. I mean, he's been in our team for what, the best part of a year, basically. Maybe about a year ago or something, he came into our team, was it not? Maybe even just a wee bit later, actually. Sorry, maybe 8 months or so. But he's playing first team football. He's not looking out of place. So I don't see why he's not been involved, basically, in the Scotland under-21s. As you says, it's interesting to look through the list of players that have been picked. There's very few of them who I've ever seen, to be fair. One or two of their names, you know, for the odd game of Football Manager, but you know, it's interesting to see Scott Gemmell's obviously looking to the future, as you say, leaving out maybe guys like Ryan Gold that you mentioned and stuff like that. So he's also hoping that he can bring them through together, work as a team, and hope that maybe one or two of them push on and become full internationalists. So you know, it's good to see him doing that, and as you say, it's great to see a guy like Chris Cadden involved.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's worth pointing out that Scott Gemmell was the Scotland under-17s manager, and a lot of the players that he's now subsequently called up for his first under-21 squad did play for him in the under-17s championships, European championships, I think it was. So, I mean, it's obviously he knows the players. He's obviously got the confidence in them. Joe, is this... I suppose there's two ways you can look at it. We were obviously talking about it quite extensively earlier on. I mean, I suppose when there's so many wholesale changes, it's easy to perhaps thinking that it's a manager just trying to do things differently or trying to make his own mark. But as the other side of the coin, that it could actually be quite a refreshing change, that we're looking to bring in guys who are perhaps there on merit, guys who deserve the chance to develop, and then perhaps a move away from the idea that it's all about results, and it's more about actually bringing through young players.
Yeah, definitely. I'd more with the latter, that it's a refreshing change to see him not kind of go with the status quo, because when any manager comes into a job with an international team, I mean, it's probably the safe option for him to go with the nucleus of the squad that he's kind of inherited, if you like. But the bottom line is, for me, that you can talk about results and you can talk about development. The Scotland under-21 team under Ricky Sprazier was getting neither, really. The results weren't great, as well as them playing guys that were 20, 21, 22 constantly, when there were perhaps younger guys that merited more of a chance. I mean, you look at the likes of Joe Chalmers, as you mentioned, coming in for that last game there. He's 22, and he was only eligible to play in that game because at the start of the qualifiers, it was his date of birth suited then. But, I mean, he wasn't going to be able to play in the next round of qualifiers, so that was just so short-sighted, and I kind of thing that's kind of epitomised how Scotland's national teams have been recently, when you think about the fact that we were using friendlies at the end of the season last year to play Gordon Greer, who will be approaching his 38th birthday the next time we could get to a major tournament. And above that, I mean, you look at the under-21 squad that was playing under Sprazier. For me, those guys that are now turning 20, 21, 22, none of them for me kind of are ready to make the step up to the national first team. There's no one that you've thought, oh, he's performed well in the under 21s or he's performed well at club level. It's time for him to push in. And maybe the exception being Stephen Kingsley, who's come through and played centre back with Swansea in the Premier League. Maybe he could have an argument that he's done well in under 21s and he's ready to push on to the first team. So in light of that, the fact that these guys have come through and they maybe all won 10, 15 caps with Scotland under 21s, but they're not in a position to kick on to the main squad now, then for that reason I'm all for kind of wholesale changes, seeing if the next batch can do it. And not only that, is if you're calling up guys that are 17 or 18, if they perform well, they've got 3 or 4 years in them at under 21 level, which might give them a better taste for international football. And who knows, when they're 21 and they're in the same age group as the guys that are kind of leaving the group just now, then they could be in a much better place to push on. So, I mean, even if you look at the kind of big names that have been in the Scotland under 21s, even the likes of Jason Cummins, I would say is kind of nowhere near the first team.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think the I suppose one interesting point is the idea that if you now have a squad of perhaps 18, 19-year-olds, a lot of whom that we don't really know too much about, perhaps don't have a great deal of experience at a particularly high level, that then, although Chrissy Cadden obviously only has one cap, that then could be almost the ideal environment for a player like Cadden. You know, you've got a squad there, presumably, that's going to be allowed to kind of grow together, to express themselves. You know, it's quite obvious at the end of the day, if you're going to pick an under 21 squad and you are focused entirely on results, then you are going to call up Ryan Gold, you're going to call up, you know, Jason Cummins, whoever else, guys who perhaps might not be eligible by the end of the campaign but might still be eligible just now. And the fact that we haven't, I think we have to be fully supportive. The biggest problem we've got is even at level like under 21s, if you don't get a few good results, if you start to go on a poor run, people, you know, start to be negative, start to call for your head, and suddenly any good work that somebody like Scott Gemmell might have done up until that point gets chucked in the bin because he's not getting the results. So if we're going to go down this route, then we need to stay with it because it's going to, you know, bear more fruit than what we've been doing previously. But I mean, Buster, is this how big a chance is this for Cadden? Because if he's now got a manager who is picking squads with the long term in mind, with you know, that idea of development, not too much pressure on results, Cadden, although, as I said, although he's only got one cap, he is probably one of the most experienced players now in the Scotland under 21 squad, and that's a big, big opportunity for him.
That's exactly it, yeah. As you say, you know, and as I said 10 seconds ago, he's playing first team football. Again, I'm looking through the list of the players who were called up. You know, I can see there's one or two of them from teams like Nottingham Forest on loan at Mansfield Town, things like that, guys from Newcastle or at Newport. You know, they're probably getting first team football there as well. You know, Cadge has been playing in the Motherwell first team, as I say, is there for the best part of, you know, 8-10 months. He's going to be, as you say, probably one of the more experienced players in that squad. So there's a good chance of him being one of the, you know, the main players in the team. He's only just turned 20 himself last week or whenever it was. As you say, if, you know, Scott Gemmell is going to be concentrating on bringing these guys through, developing them, you know, teaching them, you know, the ways of international football, basically, it's something that is very encouraging, and it's something obviously you'd love to see Chris Cadden make that step up, maybe in a year's time or something, to actually getting into the Scotland team, you know, the Scotland senior team. So it's a big opportunity for him, and as you say, I think he's gonna grab it by the horns and do well, I think.
Just to wrap up on Chrissy Cadden and just to keep the love in going a wee bit longer, I mean, Joe, Buster mentions the idea of a full senior cap at some point further down the line. I mean, if Chrissy Cadden keeps going the way he's going, how far away could that possibly be? Because I know we, it's easy to kind of think, oh, well, you know, it's Motherwell, we're unfashionable, we don't get players called up. But previously we've had guys like Stephen Saunders capped, which was a nonsense in itself. I mean, surely Chrissy Cadden, if he keeps going the way he's going, and he does impress with under-21s, as I said, particularly given the fact that he's going to be one of the more experienced in that squad, I mean, there is a genuine opportunity there. There is a genuine route to full international honours, surely, for Chrissy Cadden.
Yeah, definitely, I think there is. I mean, I think he's a great lad, and he's come through really well since he came into the first team in January. He kind of cemented his place, and I mean, since then, we've seen him come on leaps and bounds, physically and technically, in that time. I mean, he's, as much as we were all impressed with him when he came in January, even, he's just kicked on so much since then. And this season, he seems to thrive on the fact that people are now seeing him as a big influence in our team. What I will say is, though, I do think senior owners might be just a bit off the mark just now. I mean, we were discussing earlier how we were saying that Barry Mackay might be the token Rangers player that's included in this squad coming up, and that might be the case. And I was saying that in terms of Barry Mackay, just now we've got Oliver Burke, Anya, Snodgrass, Richie, James Forrest, all guys like that can play out wide. And I know Cadden can play out wide and in the middle, but kind of midfield seems to be the place where we're stocked up just now. And while I don't entirely advocate it, I can't see Strachan kind of, for example, dropping a James Morrison or a Akechie Anya from the squad and putting Cadden in, whether rightly or wrongly so. I think it's just kind of something that I think there's definitely potential for him to get a senior cap. And I think when Saunders got his cap, it was just a case of him being in the right place in the right time, transferring from the under-21 squad to the senior squad at the last minute. I think there is, as I say, there's definitely potential for Cadden to get that full cap, but I think he will need to kind of spend a couple more years, perhaps, proving himself at club level. One thing that does, I'll probably say the single thing that does frustrate me about Cadden is that come the summer he'll only have a year left in his contract. I would love for us to get him on an extension. I would kind of hope we would be putting the wheels in motion for that. Whether his agents advised him that it's better for his career to just wait out his contract or whatever, if it increases his options, but I would really like to think that Motherwell are doing all they can to kind of extend that contract. And if he does continue to progress the way he's been progressing, there's absolutely no doubt that his career will outgrow Motherwell, but you would like to think we would get a decent fee for it. Whereas if it's just the way things are just now and it comes to the summer and he's got a year left in his deal, I would just hate to see us panic selling him for a fee that doesn't justify his ability.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, I should point out that, you know, I'm not for a second advocating that Strachan should pull him out of the under-21 squad when he names his full squad tomorrow and puts him in. I do agree that we're still a wee while away, but I think it's always good to have a player like Cadden, you know, coming in, a player that you can get genuinely excited about, particularly at a time when in recent months even, we've seen guys like John McGinn, Kenny McLean, you know, as you said, Barry Mackay, you know, guys like that getting capped. Who is Chrissy Cadden really a million miles away for those kind of guys? I would say that perhaps McGinn and McLean are perhaps slightly ahead. They've got a bit more experience. They're perhaps slightly more composed and a bit more technically better on the ball. But is Chrissy Cadden really a million miles away for Barry Mackay? I don't think he is. So if Barry Mackay can get a cap, then I'd like to think further down the line, you know, whether it's this season or not, perhaps next season, I think Chrissy Cadden should by all means have his sights set on that. Of course, having only picked up one cap for the under-21s, his first step is to cement himself there. But as I said earlier, I think he's got an excellent opportunity to do that. Obviously, to you know, further impress guys like Strachan. Obviously, you've got McGee involved anyway at the setup, but to impress guys like Strachan, then perhaps games like Friday night against Hearts are the kind of games that he's going to have to turn it on. It's going to be a difficult game. One of the reasons in past podcasts, I think before the Dundee game, before the Accies game and before the Thistle game, I made the point that I felt that although they weren't quite what must-win games, I did think they were very important games to get points on the board because we're getting into such a difficult run. We've, of course, got Hearts, then it's international weekend, then Celtic, and then, of course, we were going to have Aberdeen away until that was postponed. I mean, Buster, how big a task is Friday? Because, as I said earlier, we kind of perhaps were a wee bit naive about Partick Thistle. We looked at the league table, we said, oh, Partick Thistle are bottom, we're doing well. You know, this should be a good chance to get points on the board. It's perhaps a little tempting to look at the league table and say, oh, well, Hearts are you know, top three like they should be. They're sitting in third place. They're a good, good side. But in reality, they're only 2 points behind us. Ahead of us.
Yeah, that is, again, that is the reality of it. But I think I mentioned last week as well, you know, it's the start of the season. Everybody's still bunched up together, to be fair. I think if you look at basically from Hearts to maybe 8th or 9th, Inverness or Dundee, I can't mind what one it is, but you know, we're all roughly 3-4 points at max between those teams. Hearts are going to be near the top end of the table this season. Again, you know, they've got a big squad, they've got some good players involved in there. So it's going to be a hard one. I've made it clear that I'm of the opinion that MD in this league can beat MD at any time, maybe out with Celtic, but you know, we've got a home advantage. We seem to be doing pretty well at home. We're on an unbeaten run, as has been mentioned. Again, granted, we've only won one of those games, but I think that. You know, if we go back to the sort of McGee of, you know, 9 years ago again, where we blitz him in the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, you know, who's to say we can't get 2 or 3 goals like we did a couple of weeks ago and, you know, see what happens there. But it's going to be difficult. And as I say, Hearts will be a good team. You know, for years they've been up to their usual tricks, every wee dirty trick in the book. So it'll be a difficult one, but hopefully, you know, we can... 3 points would be ideal, but I wouldn't argue with a point at the moment.
Yeah, Joe, Buster obviously mentions the idea of going out and kind of blitzing them like we did against Accies, and we obviously did when McGee was here first time around. Is that the kind of way you can see us approaching the game on Friday? I mean, Hearts are perhaps a different prospect. I mean, I said last week that I fully expected McGee to work towards that style of football, that idea of being an attacking 4-3-3 and trying to take the game to the opposition before they can really get a foothold in the match, as we did at Accies. But I did say that I thought it was maybe, you know, a few weeks away. I didn't think we were going to implement it straight away. Perhaps that was fortunate in that we were playing, you know, what, a lesser side, maybe. I'm just not sure how we'll line up on Friday night. As I said earlier, we looked a bit more defensive at Far Hill, you could argue that Partick Thistle and Hamilton Accies aren't too different in terms of you know, football and ability, and so if we could have went and attacked Accies, we should have been able to go and attack Partick Thistle, particularly because we lined up the same way. I mean, how do you see McGee approaching this game on Friday? Is he likely to stick with what we did against Hamilton Accies, or is he more likely to be a little bit cautious because of who we're playing? Or, as is always the chance with Mark McGee, is there an attempt at tactical genius, you know, going to rear its ugly head?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It's a difficult one to think what he's going to do. You might see that Hearts are only a couple of headers or whatever, and you really shouldn't be fearing a team who are only a couple of points ahead of you, especially when you're playing them at home. So in that way, you could go out and kind of try and blitz them the first 15-20 minutes. But what I do think is Hearts are they're a different calibre of side to Hamilton Accies. They've got a more resolute defence, I would say. So I think he would probably view Hamilton has been able to get more change out of them to begin with, whereas he might not want to overcommit against Hearts. It'll be interesting to see. I think Hearts have kind of they started the season very well, but they've kind of misfired the past couple of games. So maybe we've caught them at the right time. And for all they signed Connor Salmon and Tony Watt in the summer, and that was to be supposed to be a kind of great partnership in the offing. They actually said in Sports Scene at the weekend there that they've actually only got one goal each, so their goals are possibly going to come from all around the park. So whether he's more kind of rigid in midfield as a result of that, knowing that it's not always our strikers where the goals come from, I'm not sure. I would like to see us kind of go out and attack them from the off on Saturday, especially you're playing at home. And I would like to think we're also a full strength team that you would say there wouldn't be much of a difference, if any, from Hearts. There's obviously a few Hearts players I would like to have at Fir Park, but I mean, I don't think, if you look at our best 11, I don't think we should be fearing a Hearts team coming to Fir Park.
And Bust, obviously the game's the Friday night. It's perhaps a change to the fixture list. Like all changes that will annoy some, I remember when it was announced on Twitter that there was one or two gripes about folk no longer being able to make it because it wasn't the Saturday. That's of course unfortunate. Personally, I'm delighted because it's Moisey's wedding on Saturday, so it means I can go to the football now as well on the Friday. I mean, there is something. I'll be honest, when it was first brought in, the Friday night football thing, I wasn't a fan. It wasn't something that really appealed to me on a Friday. But I think now that I've gotten used to it, I think it can be quite a good thing, and I'm quite looking forward to it.
I agree with you on the Friday night football. As you say, I was unsure at first, and then after one or two games I'd attended on a Friday night, it was great, to be honest with you. It gave me my Saturday to do what I needed to do, which was nothing, so I laid my scratcher all day. But as you say, the Friday night football is, I think it's a good idea. When it was announced that this one was changed, like yourself, I was initially delighted, but only a couple of weeks ago I realised that I've got a gig in Edinburgh, so I haven't even got to actually make it. I'll be in Edinburgh. So it's just, I don't mind the Friday night football. It's just that, unfortunately, on this occasion, it's put me out a wee bit. But I think Friday night at Fir Park, it's a good time and a good place to be.
Well, see, you're exactly the kind of Motherwell fan who should have been bombarding the Motherwell Twitter account with abuse for that change that they probably had absolutely no input in whatsoever.
As you say, it would have been, I don't know, is it Sky or BT or something, but it would have been one of them that had changed it. And when it was announced and I seen all the people who were upset, I thought to myself, fuck, I'm delighted at that. And as I say, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I realised I can't make it either.
Well, I don't actually know if it's BT or Sky. I'd hope, even though I'm not going to see it, I would hope it's BT, because when you watch Scottish football on BT Sport, you do get the impression that they actually give a shit about it, whereas the same could not be said for Sky Sports.
I think it's always BT on a Friday.
That's
Friday,
fine.
Night fixtures are always there.
Let's be honest, Sky Sports could not give the slightest toss about Scottish football.
I agree with you. Where BT actually seem to have had a bit of a positive input in the couple of years they've been covering it, whereas Sky just give you 5 minutes before kick-off, the interviews, and then that's it. BT seem to kind of do features and kind of respect the game a bit more. Not even that as well. I mean,
it's not, a couple of weeks ago, it was obviously the first Celtic Rangers League game in a while. It's on Sky, and what did they have on it near enough the exact same time? The Manchester Derby. Fair enough, these things are controlled by the police and that as well, but the TV companies have a big say in the kick-off times. If they cared that much, they would have moved that, what is arguably probably the most attractive to outsiders game in the Scotland is the Manchester Derby, and as expected, it trounced it in their viewers, but as you say, it just goes to show the Sky couldn't care less.
Well, we've had about 40 minutes, I think, which, considering we had absolutely... Whoa, what was that?
I'm guessing it's McKelvey.
Aye, stop fidgeting, McKelvey. You're terrible for this. But we've had about all 40 minutes, which, considering we had absolutely no idea what we were going to talk about to begin with, I think it's good going. Last point, I know Sparra's been using the Facebook and the Twitter to obviously raise interest in the MFC podcast Bookazine, which is now just a few days, I think, from final orders. I think the last time I checked, there were 5 copies still available, which, considering there's going to be a run of 200, I think is fantastic. If MD's listening and doesn't really know much about it, if you want to go to mfc1886.com or mfcpodcast.co.uk, I think are the 2 website addresses for us. It's all on there. It's a good cause, Imogen's dream. It's worth getting involved. £8 gets you a limited edition, 1 of 200 copies of the Bookazine. We're all contributing. I know that, Buster, you've got a wee piece about the podcast itself. I'm talking about fan ownership. Joe, yeah. what are you focusing on?
Mine was the Motherwell connection in the English Premier League. It's about...
All right, okay. Well, we can look forward to all that and a lot more. There's some cracking interviews in there with everybody from Tommy Coyne and Willie Pettigrew to Louis Moult and Kevin Twaddle and a good few in between. So read up on that. See if you can get one of the last 5 copies if you can. I think we'll round it up there because I'm about ready for my bed. So Busta and Joe, thanks very much.
Thanks for having us again. Cheers. No bother, thanks very much.
Well, if you're going along on Friday, then enjoy it and hopefully there'll be 3 points. Think of Buster, who we've obviously found out can't be there. We will be back next week at some point, hopefully with Sparra, with a new set of lungs. Until then, cheerio. Choking.